You're locked in to Elevated Radio FM.
And welcome to Elevated Radio. My name is Rick Delgado. I'm your host. And welcome to Heavy Metal Toxicity with Dr. David G. Young. Dr. David Young, well, he is the owner over at All Natural Doctor. You can reach out to him a couple different ways, actually. Jump online, of course. That's probably the best way to do it. Go to allnaturaldoctor.com. That's allnaturaldoctor.com. You can also, read up about him. Check him out there. You can also reach out to him by phone. He's more than happy to take phone calls at his office at 360-687-3340. And again, Dr. David G. Young. Welcome back to the program, sir, and how are you?
Doing just fine, thank you.
Yeah, you got it. And thank you again for joining us. I know we've got a lot to get to on today's show. Just remind everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do as the owner of All Natural Doctor.
Naturopathic doctor thinking outside the box from conventional medicine, trying to figure out the today's show becoming heavy metal toxicity. And there's some diseases of which there's no cure because they don't know why it started. Thinking right out of the box and trying to figure out what's going on and heal the people that way.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Heavy metal toxicity. A tough enough thing to say, at least the third word there for me. since our time is short, let's try and get as much in as possible, shall we?
Okay. So an example of heavy metal toxicity might be of the metals. Would be lead, mercury, aluminum, antimony, nickel, tin, uranium. Notice I said aluminum when I say heavy metals.
Yeah. Now, why is that significant?
Well, when you pick up aluminum, it's actually light in weight.
Oh, okay.
But we don't look at that by what you pick up. We look at the atomic mass. So as high atomic density as defined by the periodic chart of elements, and if it is toxic, then it's considered a heavy metal toxicity.
Right. Okay. Now, as for those heavy metals you mentioned, again, lead, mercury, aluminum, did you mention uranium?
Yes, uranium is in there.
Tin, nickel, you said? Well,
actually, when I do the test, there's 20 metals that I test for, not just these few. These are just examples. 20 in the urine and another 10 in the hair. So it's actually 30 that I test for. It's just too long to talk about 30 of them.
All right. So now what kind of tests are we talking about? When you say I run tests and test for these, what are these tests?
There's actually three tests. The first one is a hair test. The blood cannot test for everything. So I run the hair test because there's blood flow in the back of the neck that innervates the hair. And when the hair is grown, these constituents come out of the blood into the hair,
right,
and so that makes the test valid. So we take the hair at the nape of the neck, or the nap of the neck.
Okay.
So if you look at like a bald man, there's always hair back there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they've got good blood flow. And if it's a long-haired person, we only take the first inch of the hair. We want the first hair growth. And if there's no hair at the back of the neck, there's absolutely nothing, then pubic hair is a substitute.
Oh, okay.
The other two tests are both urine tests. I run those back-to-back, meaning it's almost identically the same day one and day two. The person gets up in the morning, voids the urine, so you can get all the urine that's been sitting in the bladder all night, cannot take any vitamins, cannot take anything but reverse osmosis water, collects all the urine for a six-hour period of time. I have a very precise protocol that must be followed if it's going to be accurate.
Right.
The difference between day one and day two urines is that day two I give a chelating agent, so that I can see what the person will not excrete by themselves. So the whole idea behind these tests, the hair test and the first urine test, what will the body excrete all by itself?
Right.
The second urine test is what can be excreted that is there, but the body can't do it. I'll give you an example. I have a Parkinson's patient, stage 4, very bad health, 50 years married. I did a test both on her and him.
Right.
And his hair, his first urine and his second urine all had some heavy metals coming out. And it was a bit disconcerting, but it was basically going in his body, going out. Her test, her hair and her first urine, nothing, clean as a whistle, no toxins at all. We did the chelating test, and oh my gosh, where all that lead come from?
Really?
More lead than I ever seen anybody in my life. And I truly believe that lead, in her particular case, is causing Parkinson's. Now, there's very, very many reasons for causing Parkinson's, but in her case, the lead was the culprit, I'm sure of it.
Wow. So now, you mentioned this, what is it, a chelating agent? What is that?
Yes, it's a chelating anti-lating agent. If you're a little tiny molecule, it'll look like the Mack truck coming down the closet, they're going to scoop you up. It'd be kind of scary. But it's actually just a small molecule.
Right.
So the small molecule goes out, and it's got these four claws in the middle, and it picks up minerals, and it has an affinity for heavy metals. But it'll pick up a mineral, and if it sees a heavy metal with a large atomic density mass,
mm-hmm.
it drops the one in favor of the other one in heartbeats. So like, if you are on your first date, and you picked up this hot date, and during the middle of your date, you said, hey, there's somebody better, let's drop this one and go to the next one.
Right.
That's kind of like the claw dust. But there are three different types of chelating agents that can be used in medicine. One is EDTA.
Okay.
Kinetically, it's Echo Delta Tangle Alpha. Then there's DMPS. That's Delta Mike Papa Sierra. The one I like is DMSA, Delta Mike Sierra Alpha. The first two have to be administered intravenously. You've got a needle dangling from your arm,
right.
you got an IV bag up ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been, I used to specialize in EDTA, but there are some doctors, reports to some doctors from the boards, that the patients die because the doctors were not careful enough, so it's very heavily regulated. But I switched to DMSA because it's so easy, it's not harsh, it's just so nice and sweet, nice way to go, and it works the same way.
Right. All right. Now, so when it comes to these heavy metals, where in the body are they collected? That when you're doing these tests, they're coming out through there, like you said, the hair and stuff like that.
Well, if you do an internet search, the people on the internet feel that heavy metals can only collect in soft tissues like muscles, intestines, fat cells, et cetera, but that's really not true. They can cross the bad ones, like the lead, the mercury, aluminum, arsenic, they can cross the blood-brain barrier and accumulate inside of the brain. Lead can also accumulate inside of the bone tissue. And so these heavy metals, lead, mercury, aluminum, arsenic, tin, they all conduct the electricity.
Right.
So they can destroy brain cells by short-circuiting electrical brain activity besides being toxic to the cell. And then it depends on where it settles. Now, there's a small part of your brain down the very bottom center part called the substantia nigra. If it settles there, you're going to get Parkinson's disease. If it settles in the frontal lobe, you're going to get Alzheimer's dementia. If it's side lobes, you're going to get visual and hearing problems and motor functions.
Wow. All right. So now what dangerous metals do you see most often, I should say, in your own practice when you're working with somebody?
The first two that receive the gold medal are lead and mercury. Silver medal is arsenic, and the bronze medal is aluminum, in that order.
Right.
Lead and mercury are the really big ones.
Right. Now, where are they coming from? Where is something like the lead toxicity? Tell us where that's coming from.
Well, it can come from older homes, crystal glass, ceramics, canned food, and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But where a lot of the lead toxicity comes from is actually from leaded gasoline.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. And you know what? I love the smell of gasoline, so that's a bad thing. All right.
Well, nowadays, not a bad thing. But there's been medical research that positively identifies the connection between earlyhood childhood exposure to lead,
right.
and future criminal activity, especially of a violent nature. That's research. More research shows that lead exposure to children ends up with aggression, destructive, and delinquent behavior and criminal activity. More research ties it into antisocial and destructive behavior in humans and animals even. And very low levels of lead will actually stunt the normal brain growth of children, which is going to result in cognitive and behavioral impairments. It will result in violent behavior in teens, the loss of self-control, short attention span, poorly perform in school, and drop out of high school.
Oh, wow.
So let me tell you about the history of the lead.
Okay.
Is that it first began in our country in 1922. It's from the automobile industry.
Right.
The valves on an engine were burning out, so you had to put lead in the gas in order to make the valves so they'd be lubricated, not burnt out. But it was also coming to light that we've got a problem with health. And so in the 1970s, they started getting rid of lead in gasoline. In 1995, it was illegal in the United States. But in 2014, it's still legal in the countries of Iraq, Yemen, North Korea, and Afghanistan. In 2016, still in Algeria, Yemen, and Iraq. So there's still a problem out there. Oh, and another thing, too, about leaded gasoline, the reason why we have to talk about it is because if you're living at any time prior to 1995, you've been exposed to it. Now, we don't know for sure if leaded gasoline can go through the placenta, but we know, lead.
Right.
We don't know if it can go through the placenta, but we do know for sure it goes through the blood-brain barrier, and the blood-brain barrier is a lot more tightly regulated than the placenta. So if you have a lot of heavy metal toxicity, your moms out there, and you give birth to children, you might be passing some blood to your children.
Oh, wow. And what would that lead to? I'm sure that that's going to lead to probably mental problems, right? Learning disabilities?
Yes, there's going to be learning disabilities. What's very, very interesting is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development was tracking this for almost the last 100 years, mm-hmm. and they found in different parts of the country there was the waves of high and low of lead in the air from auto exhaust, and they found there's about a 10-year lag. So 10 years after the lead is high in the environment, all of these violent crimes come up, like rape and robbery, assault and murder. About 10 years after it goes down in a particular area, those crimes decrease, and then it goes up again and down. They tracked it all over the country.
Oh, wow.
And so that's a pretty big deal. And another thing interesting is that I started talking a little bit about Parkinson's. I do know that lead will disrupt the normal release of dopamine. And dopamine is a very powerful neurochemical that must be present for brain functions. Without dopamine, it can actually disrupt the brain structure, disrupt normal brain chemistry, and you have inhibition problems, learning problems, and impulsiveness. So think of these people that are always watching these movies, everybody shooting everybody, right. And they have no inhibition, and they are impulsive. So what has been done, there's a common denominator out there.
Right.
When criminals are bad and the police have to remove them and an autopsy is done, they always find lead is high in their bones.
Wow.
It's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, very. And especially because I remember growing up, doctor, about the big to-do with lead paint.
And that's another big one, lead paint. There's pictures a long time ago with little kids eating paint off the wall that's peeling. And so lead of paint, when the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development did the studies, they included gasoline fumes and lead of paint.
Mm-hmm.
And so kids can get lead toxicity from that as well. And that's where the studies come up with stunted brain growth in kids and going into violent behavior when they're in their teens, loss of self-control.
Right.
This is all connected.
Wow. It's kind of amazing stuff, and it's stuff that's kind of unfolded over the years as this research has gone on. What are some other common sources of lead that could be out there in the environment?
Other common sources?
Yeah. Because I know you're talking about the lead-based paints in older homes, stuff like that.
Well,
are there other things we should be
concerned
about?
Crystal glass has lead, ceramics.
Really?
Food crops, water, and a big one is canned food, and you know why. Because if you look at canned foods, when the cans are put together, they're soldered. There is a seam down the side and on the bottom and the top.
Yep.
Soldering is composed of lead and tin. And the lead will leach into the lead cans, and you're consuming lead. It might be trace amounts, but it only takes trace amounts to cause a problem.
Right.
So that's another big source right there.
Wow. And so much food is canned. It's kind of amazing. Hey, now because you said there's a tie for first place, right? Lead and mercury.
Yes, that's the other gold medal. They had to share the gold medal this year.
So tell us more about that mercury toxicity, because I know that one can be very, very dangerous.
Extremely dangerous. University of Calgary, Canada, they did a video in 2007 of research they did, and they knew 15 years beforehand about mercury toxicity, and 10 years before they released that video, in other words, in 1997, they knew that it was related to dental amalgam tooth fillings. That was a major contributor to mercury body burdens. And so what they did in their studies is they studied snail brain neurons, and then they put a small amount of mercury in it, and then the myelin sheath would just melt away. So think of brain cell neurons for snails. They're the same polypeptides as humans. So what we see there is for us.
Right.
Okay. So think of nerves as copper wire in your home, and imagine you've got copper wire and then you've got a rubber coating. That's the myelin sheath, and the mercury simply melts the myelin sheath away.
Right.
And so that's how come that this is such a powerful thing here.
Wow. All right. Now, are there any links to things for people to watch or to read up on when it comes to something like this?
My web Ticketmaster is currently putting these up on my website. They'll be up sometime soon.
Okay.
But I have three links from the University of Calgary, Canada, and I included all three just in case somebody higher up decides we're not supposed to see these things. But it's from Canada, so I hope it's safe. One link was in 2007, 2012, 2013. So once my webmaster gets this up, go to allnaturaldoctor.com to click on resources, medical topics, heavy metal toxicity, and you find those links.
Right. Ah, that's amazing.
I will tell you something I just did as stupid as a kid. I liked seeing how mercury worked, and so my dad replaced the thermostat in his home and threw in the garbage. He had the yellow thermostat that had a mercury ball inside of there. I took it apart and looked at it, and I go, the mercury that rolls around your hand is kind of cool. It's liquid for a metal. It's kind of fun to look with it. Look at it. I said, what am I doing? Get rid of this. You're stupid.
Yeah, you know what? And they talk about the mercury, I guess they found in some ancient ruins, underneath one of the pyramids or something in down in Mexico, that there was like a lake. They called it like a lake of mercury under there that must have been insanely toxic. Hey, what are some of the symptoms in case somebody does do something like that? You know, they get the mercury on themselves or they've got the dental, the fillings that used to always be mercury.
Well, first of all, in a hair analysis, if a 1 part per million content of mercury, you have a 9% increase in the chance of a heart attack. But I will not cover all the symptoms. I'll only cover a few. The rest will be on my website soon. Ataxia, intention tremors, chronic fatigue because it affects the thyroid gland, depression, poor memory, poor cognitive function, learning disabilities, behavioral disorders. See, a lot of these are from the brain, you see.
Right.
Emotional instability, speech impairment, irritability, and then extends to the rest of the body. Peripheral numbness all over the place, or you have a hard time seeing, hearing, and touching. What I see all the time in my practice, when I do a food allergy test, if somebody's hypersensitive to the food, they also have high mercury levels.
Right.
And when they're hypersensitive to the food, there's a condition called systemic candidiasis. It's basically a chronic yeast overgrowth that contaminates the entire body. That's a very, very bad thing. And then it also ends up decreasing nerve signaling. And remember I talked about how it melts away that myelin sheath?
Yeah.
Well, here's what can happen eventually and does happen. And the medical community does not know this yet, but you can get an autoimmune disease like systemic lupus. That's basically the butterfly rash. You have an autoimmune system that mistakenly attacks healthy tissue because of the lack of communication. There's something called myelinopathies. Now, remember, the myelin sheath is like the rubber insulator for the copper wire.
Right.
Myelinopathies means that sheath is being stripped away. So what happens when the mercury is stripping away? You get diseases of when there's a problem with information from the brain to the rest of the body. Multiple sclerosis is one of them. That's why they're dragging their feet. That's why they're dragging their hands. There's no communication. Myasthenia gravis is another one. And because these are not known what the cause is, therefore these are called incurables. Now, granted, for MS or Parkinson's or any of these things, there could be multiple things going on, but if there is a problem with mercury, if you can get the mercury out, we have some hope.
Right. All right. Now, what about the dental profession? Since this is a big part of, I guess, stemming from that, are dentists aware and do they understand about this mercury toxicity?
Very, very small. In 2001, I was practicing in Portland, Oregon. I interviewed every dentist I could get my hands on in Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington. I only found 5 in Portland and 1 in Vancouver, Washington that understood this is a toxin. And so these 6 dentists in total, when they remove mercury amalgam fillings, they'll do it as a highly contaminated source, and they'll make sure there's no vapors or dust or anything getting out that contaminate anybody. And so if you go to a dentist, you really have to ask them about if they believe in mercury, because a lot of dentists, they'll put in the white composite fillings, but they'll just drill out the mercury and just let the pieces fly wherever.
Right.
And so they really don't care.
All right. Now, have any dentists, have you come across any research that the dental community has been doing?
Yes. As naturopathic doctors, we are required to have continuing education credits every year, 50 for me.
Right.
And one seminar I was at, there's about 300 naturopathic doctors in the room, and this dentist came up, and he said he believes mercury toxicity for dental fillings is a big deal. So what he did is he did research. He got a hold of every patient he could find that has any of the mercury symptoms we already discussed. And then he would take the mercury out and fill it with a composite filling. Within about 90 days, symptoms started to reverse. He had tons and tons of information. He found that mercury does decompose. When you first get the filling, it has nice and silvery color, and then mm-hmm. it gets dark. It's decomposing, but there's also off gases, so people are getting toxic. Well, what's interesting about this fellas is the ADA, American Dental Association, said, shut up or give us your license. He says, here's my license.
Wow. So he was willing to give up his license to make sure that the information got out there.
He's still lecturing. But, see, the ADA, they've got to stand up for mercury amalgam fillings. If they don't, can you imagine the lawsuits across the country would kill the dental industry?
Right.
If you did an internet search, mm-hmm. and you would find all kinds of information talking about dental amalgam fillings. But the positive ones are the ADA and government. But it might be a good idea for listeners just to make up their own mind. I don't want to tell anybody what to think.
Right.
But I'd like to mention, if you would, how much we're talking about. So a mercury filling is 40, or amalgam filling, we call them mercury because they are, it's 40 to 50% mercury content. Because remember when I was playing it with my hand, I could do whatever I wanted with it?
Yeah.
Well, when they put it into a substrate to make it so it solidifies eventually, that's why they can push it in the crevices of the tooth and they do that drilling. So if you were to look at your average size dental filling and figure 40 to 50% is mercury, and if you're to insert that in a 10-acre lake and stir it around, the EPA would close the lake for environmental contamination.
Wow.
And then mercury, if it's in the blood, well, the half-life is about 90 days. But if it's stuck in the body where the chelation agent would drag it out, its half-life is 60 years.
You know what? And that's a term I remember from science growing up. But explain what is a half-life?
Well, if you're 50 years old, you're at your half-life right now.
Yeah.
But if you were to go to a doctor and he said, okay, you have a bacterial infection and your prescription is 500 milligrams of amoxicillin every 8 hours for 10 days, mm-hmm. what he's telling you is amoxicillin, in 16 hours, there's nothing left. In 8 hours, is half gone.
Right.
So that 500 milligrams of amoxicillin is only worth 250 right now. So just think of it. If you had mercury toxicity somehow, and you didn't have any more, and it's stuck in your body with a chelation, the only way to get out is chelating molecules, in 6 years, it's going to be half gone. If you live another 60 years, 120, hey, it's all gone. No right. worries.
Well, good luck. Living an extra 120 years. Hey, you know what? I know we've been talking a lot of the details and the science behind it, but are there any clinical cases that you've got that can kind of relate to people so they can get a better grasp of what this means for them personally?
Do. One is a motorcycle mechanic. He had been doctor hopping for years.
Okay.
And he had to use a walker. He would literally, he could put weight on his feet, but he could not actually move his feet. So he would shuffle his walker about 12 inches forward, then literally drag his feet. Shuffle 12 inches forward, literally drag his feet. And he had been doctor hopping for years. So what we did is we did the urine test like you discussed with the chelating agent, found this guy's full of mercury. And so we chelated all the mercury. It was wonderful, but you know what? He still wasn't walking any better. Now, remember my show last week about frequency-specific microcurrent, how something will cause abnormal electronic signatures?
Mm-hmm.
Well, even though the mercury's out, the electronic signature damage was still there. So I started doing frequency-specific microcurrent on him, and he started to get better. Now, he always needed some kind of assistance for walking, but he stopped using the walker and was now using a cane. And when he came in the clinic and started walking down the hallway, if I wasn't paying attention, he was outpacing me. I had to just run to catch up to the guy. So that's a mercury case. And what he did for a living, he was fine-tuning Harley-Davidson motorcycles. He used this device that had mercury in it so he could look at the vacuum of the carburetors, but there's a crack in there.
Right.
And now, you want me to brief over Parkinson's? Do we have time for that?
Yeah, we have time for that. But basically what you're saying is that him using that particular device with that crack, it was poisoning him, and he had no idea.
Correct. Correct. And that's why we've got our lecture today.
Yeah. And you know what? That kind of reminds me of a friend of mine who's a car mechanic who had some difficulties with his own health because of, you know, all the toxins that he was constantly being exposed to.
That is correct. And there's a lot of toxins and herbicides and pesticides and insecticides. There's a lot of toxins in there. Like arsenic is in a lot of those. We don't have time to talk arsenic today, but that's a really big deal.
Okay. Now what about the Parkinson's you just mentioned?
Well, on my website, which is being updated right now, I have a very wonderful case we identified. Remember, there's several possible cases for Parkinson's, but this one was related to heavy metal toxicity, and it was a very positive outcome, and that's in the website. But I want to talk about the one that did not do well. That lady I talked about,
yeah,
with the husband lady,
mm-hmm,
well, to follow up on her case, my blood test showed that she had very little hydrochloric acid in her stomach.
Right.
And so that means she's very badly malnourished. You could take all the digestive enzymes in the world, but it won't do anything if you don't get your pH of your stomach down low.
Right.
So I did a very, very wonderful case study on her and said you need to take all of these supplements, pharmaceutical grade. The most important is the BT and HCL, because without that, you're not going to do anything. Well, the next day they brought that back. I thought, what? That's the most important thing you need. We said, well, we're strict vegetarians, and that particular HCL came from the stomach of a pig. We won't do that. I said, well, there's no pig in there. It's just HCL. I said, we're strict vegetarians. Sorry. So they found some HCL derived from plant material. I said, well, that's HCL from plant material. It's not the same. We're not
right.
Plants. We're animals.
Right.
So they persisted to do it that way, and she was not getting it better. And she went to stage 4, and then I lost contact with her. So that's a sad case. But on the website, I talk about a wonderful case that it was just wonderful.
All right. So which is the wonderful case? Is that the one where you use DMSA?
That's the DMSA.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of detail to go into, so I'll refer people to my website as soon as that particular part gets uploaded. But basically, we identify this Parkinson's patient, remember there's several causes, but we identify this Parkinson's patient as having lead toxicity.
Right.
We remove the lead toxicity. Now, the damage has been done to the substantia nigra in the brain. If the cells are dead, you cannot resurrect dead cells.
Uh-huh.
But the cells are still lingering on as being affected by the lead. We get the lead out, and they start to improve. So while his Parkinson's did not really reverse, a lot of the symptoms started reversing, and he used to shuffle. His wife would have to actually push him forward. Now he could get up and walk, and he actually was going for walks every day.
That's great.
On his own.
Yeah.
And eventually he passed, but not from Parkinson's, just from being an old guy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If you've got to pass, let it be from, you know, because you were able to live instead of having some disease rob you of your life.
Correct.
You know?
Absolutely.
And again, if that means cleaning things up because of the heavy metal toxicity that you've been exposed to, then you need to reach out to Dr. David G. Young and see what he can do for you. Again, he is the owner over at All Natural Doctor LLC. He's based out of Battleground, Washington. But if you reach out to him, I'm sure he'll be more than happy to talk with you, get you started, see what he can do. Reach out either by phone at 360-687-3340, or you can go to his website, allnaturaldoctor.com. That's all. naturaldoctor.com. Now, was there something else you wanted to plug at the end here, Doc?
A couple of things, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
One is, this is my last show, and there's more topics I would love to talk about, like PTSD or parasites or Parkinson's or MS, but the funding has run out. If people are interested, if they could call or contact Elevated Radio and ask for more sponsors to get on the bandwagon. And the last thing I want to do, if I get a chance to talk about Parkinson's, parasites right now, I like to mention it. On my website, I talk about parasites, and I was getting these calls from all over the world, and I finally decided this is not good enough what I've done, so I actually wrote a book about parasites that the average person can read and treat their family at home. I tell them exactly what to do, where to get the medicines, and that's also available on my website. If you go to allnaturaldoctor.com, resources, medical topics, and parasites, you see the first chapter of my book, and then to click to get to the book, to buy the book.
Right. All right. So make sure you reach out, check out the links. It's all there on the website, allnaturaldoctor.com. That's allnaturaldoctor.com. You'll see Dr. David Young, his face staring right at you when you pop on there. click on the links. You can find out more about him, the book, everything about what he does and how it can be beneficial to you and your health. Again, the phone number, 360-687-3340 or allnaturaldoctor.com. And, you know, hopefully we'll speak again, all right?
Thank you.
All right. You have a great day, Doctor. We'll be back with more on Elevated Radio right after these words.
You're locked into Elevated Radio FM. Radio FM. Radio FM.